The silent worship this time, since we spent so much time with the other. But children are excused at this time to go to children's church. Okay, Brenda. Cool. Good to be.
Huh? Twice today? Quite the day. Yes, it is. What a day. We'll have a little time to reflect throughout the rest of what we're going to do. But this morning, we're going to take a look at Psalm 40. And we'll kind of read through and reflect and sing our way through Psalm 40. So let's, if you'd like, turn there to Psalm 40. This is really a remarkable psalm. Psalm 40 is written probably by David, and written from his historical situation. But what is amazing is how God sometimes carried David along and helped him express things that were true of Christ, so that we have today what are called sometimes messianic psalms. They're psalms about the Messiah, some things that only could be true of Jesus. Some things in the psalm, some of the elements are true, definitely, of David. But somehow the Spirit of God worked in such a way as he revealed to us things that were true of Christ. And in this particular psalm, we're going to take a look at what God does for us. Let's see here. Are you ready for good to me?
We are.
So, that being said, we're going to start with this song, which kind of introduces the psalm. Okay.
Your love to fall.
this is really the tenor of the psalm that we're taking a look at. The big idea of the psalm here is that worship leads us to a better understanding of who God is. And in this first part, here is the opening of the psalm. I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me from the slimy pit, out of the mud and mire. He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. He put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see and fear and put their trust in him. This tells us a lot about who God is. The first three verses, I think, address the idea that God is a God who hears. And in God's hearing, God cares. He is listening. He is listening to you and to me whenever we are waiting, whenever we are distressed, and especially when we're stuck. The picture in these first verses depicts the person down in a slimy pit in the mud and the mire. I grew up in an area, part of Colorado, where the ground around our town is called Dobe. If you've been around Dobe mud, whenever it gets a little bit wet, like in a field wet, you can walk out there and you can literally walk right out of your boots because it's so sticky. So here's the picture. Person down in a pit, and in the pit is mud like that he can't possibly climb out. It's too slick. There's nothing that the person can do about this situation. But God is listening, even when we are stuck. God is listening, and that God is listening is shown to us in this verse by how and when God answers. It says, he placed my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. So God gives us a place to stand. He draws us out of those circumstances, giving us insight, I think, into how he answered. Look at what is assumed in the way the person is talking. He's experienced it before. He has experienced God's deliverance. In fact, the first five verses, many commentators think, is basically the summary, the idea that he wants you and me to have about God. And then the second part of the verse of the psalm is kind of how he came to that point. God is here giving us insight about how God has answered and giving us a song. Or we would call it, if you don't sing, rejoicing in a new perspective. That's basically where your heart is when you want to sing a song of God's deliverance. You're rejoicing with a new perspective in our hearts. And he gives those around a glimpse of God's goodness in saying, many will fear and put their trust in the Lord. When it comes to patience, I hear something dinging, but I don't see much movement. Do you hear that? Ding! Oh, there we go, back here. Okay, waiting patiently, it says, I waited patiently. Now here's this guy saying, I'm sitting behind a cop in the left turn lane, and the cop doesn't realize the light turned green. So I waited patiently. And this may be the extent to which our patience goes. It's for some of us, we don't wait patiently, do we? It is so hard on us. One of the things that the psalmist teaches us is to wait patiently. So it's kind of depicted in this next slide, which I hope. There. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him, Psalm 37, verse 7 tells us. Rest and wait. We learn about the God who hears in verses 1 through 3. We learn about the God who protects in verses 4 through 5. Blessed is the man who makes the Lord his trust, who does not look to the proud, to those who turn aside to false gods. Many, O Lord, my God, are the wonders you've done, the things you've planned for us no one can recount to you. Were I to speak of them and tell them, they would be too many to declare. Note first is this idea. The God who protects, his protection brings happiness to persons. The word blessed here literally means happy. Happy is the one who makes the Lord his or her trust. God's protection also far exceeds our weak alternatives. There are two alternatives. You notice here it says, who does not look to the proud. That is a reference to us trying to find solutions in other people. Sometimes people who seem to have it all together, but they may just be proud. That's one weak alternative, because proud people can let you down. The second alternative is nor turn to false gods. That is anything that'll make us feel better in the moment. Those are things that replace this precious relationship with God, where we learn to trust and walk with him in our circumstances. So there we have the God who protects us, who wants us to seek him and not these things. God's protection far exceeds our weak alternatives. And then God's protection is the basis for our future trust. It says here, many, O Lord, are the wonders you have done. This is most important for us, to reflect back on the wonders that God has done for us and done for his people. You sort through all that stuff, that becomes actually the firm foundation for your faith. You walk around the foundational work of what God has done for humanity as it's outlined in Scripture and as it's been revealed to you in your life. God did this for me. God did this for me. God did this for me. And that becomes the basis for our faith. And then God's protection, his wonders are vast. It is for things past, present, and future. Many, O Lord, are the wonders you have done, the things that you have planned for us. And it is astonishing, God's wonders is astonishing, I think, to the thoughtful person. The thoughtful person reflects here and says, no one can recount them. They're too many to declare. It is with this sense of joy and gratitude that I'd like for us to just stand and sing this next song. It's a song that especially lifts up some of God's attributes. It's called Jehovah Jireh, which means Yahweh or God will provide. Would you stand and sing with me?
Jehovah Jireh, my provider, his grace is sufficient for me. Jehovah Jireh, my provider, his grace is sufficient for me. My God shall supply all my needs according to his riches and glory. He shall give his angels charge over me. Jehovah Jireh. Jireh cares for me, for me, for me. Jehovah Jireh cares for me. Jehovah Jireh, my provider, his grace is sufficient for me, for me, for me. Jehovah Jireh, my provider, his grace is sufficient for me. My God shall supply all my needs according to his riches and glory. He shall give his angels charge over me. Jehovah Jireh cares for me, for me, for me. Jehovah Jireh cares for me, for me, for me. Jehovah Jireh cares for me.
That's the truth. That is the truth. He watches over us, he hears us, and he protects us. He's also one who calls us. Verse 6, sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but my ears you have pierced. The burnt offerings and sin offerings you did not require. Then I said, here I am, I have come. It is written about me in the scroll. I desire to do your will, O my God. Your law is within my heart. This is the God who calls. He calls you and me in verses 6 through 8. He is a God who calls us away from empty religious things. In the words, sacrifice and offering, you did not desire. The burnt offerings and sin offerings, you did not require. It isn't those things that merit anything truly in God's eyes for us. These things were given to especially Israel to teach us something. To teach us something about the costliness of sin and the wondrous grace of God. The costliness of sin, every time some animal was sacrificed, if you've ever had a beloved animal, and you know, even ranchers have these pet critters, I can imagine that a firstborn among a shepherd's flock being offered was a tearing experience. They knew it was to be done, but I think it was to help that shepherd stand and ponder and say, why would God require this? Why would God ask us for this? It's about the costliness of sin. It really matters. Sin wreaks havoc on others. Sin destroys our very sense of life. It really matters, and something needs to be done about it. And that's where Jesus became the example who did for us what we could not do. So he calls us away from just simply empty religiosity and to a reciprocal relationship. Note the words, but my ears you have pierced. Some commentators have thought that that referred to an old practice where in Old Testament times, very often a master would bore a little hole or awl through an ear, and that would mark the person as a servant. The Hebrew word here is a different word than that. It says, but my ears you have pierced. It could be read this way, but my ears you have dug. And the idea is that you've opened up my ears. Now, I don't know if they were talking about, you know, the earwax problem. And you can't hear because of the earwax problem. But literally, the idea is digging something out so that the hearing's unimpaired. My ears you have opened so that I can hear you. It's the grace of God. And so he calls us away from empty religiosity to a reciprocal relationship where we have an open ear to God. Verse 7 shows us the kind of committed relationship that he calls us to. He wants us to be available. Then I said, "Here I am. I have come." You see the open attitude of the heart. And again, many of these things reflect the life of Christ, our Savior. If we walked like him, he walked like this. A sense of identity. "It is written about me in your scroll," and we'll find out what that means. But you see, for Christ, he knew that he was connected with God's plan, what God revealed in his will. And the same is asked of you and me, that we find our place in God's plan, which is in his word. And we could say, "It is written of me in your word." That this is exactly, here we'll see, hear more specifically what it means. That we have a settled conviction or passion to serve him. "I desire to do your will, O my God." That is the committed relationship that this God calls us to. And notice the personal transformation that's reflected in the writer's heart. "Your law is within my heart." It's not in my head. It's just not things that I have to do and gut it out. It is what I want to do because it's in my heart. And because of this, because of what God has done in his heart, the psalmist believes he's God is utterly praiseworthy. Let's look at verses 9 and 10. I want to just back up and remember where it says, "It is written, I desire to do your will, O God. Your law is within my heart." I really appreciated this quote by Eugene Peterson. Reading the Bible that enters our souls as food enters our stomach, spreads through our blood, and it becomes holiness, love, and wisdom. When God's word is having its intended effect on our hearts, it breeds these things within us. Well, let's look at the God who is praiseworthy. "I proclaim righteousness in the great assembly. I do not seal my lips, as you know, O Lord. I do not hide your righteousness in my heart. I speak your faithfulness and salvation. I do not conceal your love and your truth from the great assembly." Now, let's just look at those verses. What do you note about the nature of God? Let's just list off things that are part of the nature of God in those verses. What do you see? He is faithful. What was that? He's righteous. Okay? He's always there. He's faithful. Yes? Forgiving. Loving. Truthful. All of these are wonderful characteristics of God's praiseworthy nature. When I think of the word righteousness, when you think of the word righteousness, what do you think in regard to God? When you hear God is wholly righteous, goodness, God is good through and through, God is grace. In how he deals with people, he's totally righteous. He deals with us in a grace-filled way. He's perfectly righteous. So, pure? No sin. Pure. Utterly pure. Just, okay. Couldn't tell where that came from. Somebody mentioned infirmities this morning, didn't they? Aging. Who said that? Someone who's utterly pure and holy. To me, that also speaks of beauty, the beauty of the Lord. Now let's look at the acts of praise in those verses. What acts of praise do you see? I speak. I don't hold it back. I don't just hold it in my heart. I don't just keep it to myself. Okay? Giving. Not concealing it for myself, it's for others. Giving it to others. Now, some among us find the risk, especially of encouraging in a group this size, tougher. And some find it easier. And I just want to encourage you at times, when those of you who find it tougher to risk, this is a safe place to share God's praise that's in your life. There are times when we will need to hear from you too, and I believe you'll be rewarded in that. I just want to encourage you in following the psalmist here about giving God praise for his love and his truth. Now, the next song that we're going to sing, called Pass Me Not, prepares us for the next portion of this psalm.
Say.
next part that we look at and learn more about who God is that God is merciful. In verse 11, there we go. Verse 11. Do not withhold your mercy from me, O Lord. May your love and your truth always protect me. Mercy. What comes to your mind? Especially when it is in regard to God. Forgiveness. Something undeserved.
A second chance.
A second chance. A third chance. He's praying for it again.
Filling a need you have no way to fill yourself.
Absolutely. There are two basic ideas to it. Kindness, to help give help given to someone in a very bad or desperate situation, and kind or forgiving treatment of someone who could have been treated harshly. Do not withhold your mercy, O Lord. When he says this, to me it implies previous experience with that kind of mercy. Otherwise, what would prompt such kind of praying? And the accompaniments of God's mercy, what does that look like? May your love and your truth always protect me. What kind of situation would prompt such a prayer? May your love and truth always protect me. What follows gives us kind of a hint. It's to be found in verse 12. For troubles without number surround me. My sins have overtaken me, and I cannot see. They are more than the hairs of my head, and my heart fails within me. So here's this God who is merciful, and we also find the God who forgives. The one who cries out in need can say, "For troubles without number surround me." The one who owns their sins can say, "My sins have overtaken me." The one who acknowledges their helplessness can say, "I cannot see. I don't see my way out of this because of what I've done." The one who sorrows for their wrongs can say, "They are more than the hairs of my head, and my heart fails within me." This is the honest to God heart of the person who wants to be with God in fellowship. The thing that God calls us to is to be responsible for what needs forgiven, because he is a God who forgives, and he invites us to what we're going to sing about just next.
Satisfied as long
This leads us to the God who cares. Be pleased, O Lord, to save me. O Lord, come to me and help me. May all who seek to take my life be put to shame and confusion. May all my desire, who desire my ruin, be turned back to disgrace. May those who say to me, ah, let them be put to shame. But may all who seek you rejoice and be glad in you. May those who love your salvation always say, the Lord be exalted. The Lord who cares. He cares for the broken. He asks, come quickly to me. Be pleased, he says, O Lord, to save me. Have you ever thought that God finds pleasure in helping you at your deepest point of need? Finds pleasure. I just reveled in that little thought. There are times that I'm swamped in whatever's happening to me, but I forget the character of God. He's pleased to be there with me and to see me through. And I love that about God, pleased to help. Pleased to help the oppressed. He's there for the faithful. Now some would look at 13 through 15 and say, isn't that a little harsh, the way the psalmist prays there about the people who were kind of bugging him? Isn't it a little harsh? I'm not so sure. Be pleased, O Lord, to save me. May all who seek to take my life be put to shame and confusion. Now, he's going to tell us what shame's supposed to do, this kind of shame, in just a minute. It's a good kind of shame. This kind of shame is supposed to bring a person to an awareness of what they're actually doing, how they're being hurtful. That's what it's supposed to do. And instead of them being able to continue on this course of hurting and wounding, let them be put to confusion. Could you just distract them? Could you just somehow take their attention off me? That those who desire my ruin may be turned back from oppressing me in disgrace. What is the disgrace about? It's about what they're doing. That they get new insight, I think, on what they're doing. May those who say to me, be appalled at their own shame. That is, be appalled at what they're doing, how they're oppressing. So those are the things that I think that are helpful to that. And it comes in a lot of various ways. What feels like oppression to us. Sometimes it's relational, sometimes it's inside, like the following. I love these little cards. Everyone's all like, look at my garden made from scratch cake and respectful children. While I'm over here like, well, we're breathing. You know, you're just getting through it. And everybody else seems to have it so together. Sometimes it's internal too, how we feel oppressed. But he closes up with this, the God who sees us through. Yet I am poor and needy. May the Lord think of me. You are my help and my deliverer. O God, do not delay. This is the God who sees us through. There's an interesting book called If Life is a Bowl of Cherries, why is my bowl full of pits or something like that. I think Irma Baumbeck wrote the thing. And this guy starts the Psalm 40 in the pits. And this is kind of where he finally got. I don't know if you feel like it. It seems like some things in life are surely cyclical. We come around, and it comes around again and again. Pain, need, feeling overwhelmed or panicked by what is going on. Sometimes self-imposed, sometimes not. Yet when we are poor and needy, we can say, I'm poor and needy. When we are panicked, we can say, oh my God, do not delay. When we feel alone in our problems, we can say, may the Lord think of me. When we feel inadequate to the task, we can say, you are my help and my deliverer. And you finish that and you go right back up to the beginning of this psalm. You can start through that and see where he's come from and how it affected his life. It made this person full of praise and joy with God. We're going to sing our benediction now as we close. And Sandy?
Benediction before the worship team leads us. For those of you who have been more recent Cherry Grovers, which means like in the last 20 years rather than 30, you may not have heard this before. When I first came here in 1980, this is how we ended every service. We would sing this song to the tune of Edelweiss, and it has the words up here, may the Lord mighty God bless and keep you forever. And the worship team will lead us in that. But what we would do is we would stand and join hands across the aisle so that we can become one. And I think this is a really touching song as we sing it, especially with our pastoral couple, Janet and Arden. It's our benediction to them, if you will. So if you would stand and join hands. And while you're doing that, plenty of food. If you would like to stay for the potluck after but did not bring anything, don't worry about it. We have lots of food there.
Eat.